What is up, doe? Welcome to Pixel and Roll, the podcast about your Washington Wizards. This is Adam McGinnis once again, part three.
Welcome back.
Ideal situation. Yeah. We had little technical problems. We're not Comcast where we miss free throws or miss out of bounds plays because they're trying to do promotions. This is my 15-year-old nephew calling my phone, asking about fantasy football advice, which is very relevant here.
You got to know your priorities. Fantasy football, middle of a draft, you got to help your cousin out.
I mean, you're trying to sell some cars or sell some pizza, and then they miss a free throw. Yes. I'm like, really, Comcast? Like, really? Anyway, sorry to my friends at Comcast. You do a hell of a job, Buck and Phil, and our people out there. But welcome back. We have done some things. We've rearranged our script, and we're going to go back to part three. We need to talk about what, you know, aside from we've talked about the draft, end of the season, we have talked about this summer, the major stories, but we need to talk about, like, who is on this mother effing team, and who is this team? What are the soldiers that they're going to roll with? Mr. Garfield has decided, and Tommy Shepard, and those people in the front office, which I respect them a lot, honestly, even though they sometimes probably don't think I do because we're critical, but I really I do respect what they do and what they have brought to this team this year and the decisions they've made, and kind of we're going to go through the depth chart of what they have. And Kyle, we mentioned briefly here in part two, as we're in part trace, they sign Allen Anderson with the Nets, Michigan State Sparty. Like, I'm a Hawkeye, so I hate the Spartans. But yes, Allen Anderson, Gary Neal, local guy, Baltimore, Townsend.
He was with Milwaukee.
Last year, was Spur.
With the Bobcats for a little bit. Is where he actually signed his contract.
And then Jared Dudley would be the three new additions to this team. But before we start on the new additions, and we have to do this, Kevin Serafin, KS Life, left the team. He didn't really get the – if you would follow the Wizards – there would always be some time when there'd be a good Kevin Serafin game, and someone would be like, "Ah, oh, man, Kevin Serafin's gonna get so much money. Some team is gonna get him like millions and millions and millions of dollars." And like, you'd be like, "And we know it's fool's gold. Like we know it's always been in this fool's gold where Kevin would have these monster games, and he'd always be like, you know, he'd show skills for a big guy that are very rare in the world of basketball." But then you would see the consistency that would struggle, and he would be, you know, Whitman's whipping boy, for better or worse. And then you had the whole KS Life with the social media, which we're going to get into here. But so he signs with the Knicks. He doesn't get the contract.
It's 1 year, $2.8 million with the Knicks.
I think probably a good decision. I think in I'm maybe going to the last game of the year, the game six, obviously I don't want to talk about it anymore, but in the locker room I missed Beal and Wall's press conference because I interviewed Kevin Serafin 101 and we talked for about 15 minutes and maybe I'll just put it up, that audio, for that people talk about it. And he talked about how he drove to the arena that night and thought it was going to be his last game potentially ever in D.C. He's literally the longest Wizard from John Wall. Him and John Wall.
Same draft.
They're the longest tenured Wizard at the time. He talked about, you know, what he wanted to do. He didn't know if I want to take a short-term deal, long-term deal. His agent is the same agent as LeBron.
Rich Paul.
So I kind of whispered around, did he want to go to Cleveland? He didn't say. I asked him questions about his social media mogul company, and he gave me all these answers in this like French accent, which is really funny. But he really did actually give me some very introspective answers about, in his broken English, sometimes good, sometimes bad, about like being in DC and the fans and what it was like, and it was pretty cool. And he also had a really good game, if you remember. He hadn't played that much, and they actually went to him instead of Humphries again. But he hadn't played that much, and he had a really good game in 14 points. He had a really good game, and he kind of talked about this is kind of a fitting way for Kevin season end. Now the Wizards didn't pick up his option, so he's kind of restricted. Now, we thought maybe that the Wizards, and we're going to get into the roster things, that maybe the Wizards at the end here would just maybe bring back Kevin for maybe $2.8 million. They don't. Before we get into that decision, I just want to ask Mr. Truth about it. Give me some KS Life. Give me some KS Life. Give me, we could probably have a whole podcast about KS Life, but we're going to do a little 5-10 minutes on KS Life.
Bless his Segway riding heart. He was a very frustrating player, I think, more because he would always jack up shots and he would get lost on defense. But overall, the Wizards are going to miss him a little bit because he was a guy who could play center. He was okay at defending the rim, but he could really have that hook shot with either hand.
Get buckets on the second unit, right?
Yeah, he was one of the NBA's best. If you go and parse down the Basketball Reference shot stats and hook shots close to the basket, he was one of the NBA's best at field goal percentage. And you could hit him with either hand. The jump shot worked for him sometimes. I just don't think he was selective enough. The Wizards would have liked to have him back as sort of a backup center type of guy. But in New York, he's going to have a lot more opportunity. I mean, I know the Knicks got Robin Lopez. They got Kristaps Porzingis. They also got Derek Williams and Kyle O'Quinn. Kyle O'Quinn was...
But none of those guys can score like Serafin, though. They'll rebound he got, right?
He's going to get some run. And it was a situation where the market just predicated hey, when the cap officially goes up in 2016 because of the TV deal, I think he's hedging his bets. New York is, he's going to get a lot of attention for being there. So it's kind of like, it's a gamble because New York will turn on you very quickly, but they'll also like you and you'll get some shine if you play well. So he's going to get a good shot to maybe earn a contract next summer. Now he, in all likelihood, will be the same frustrating KS Life. I mean, you can't, he's a happy-go-lucky guy. You can't, he was always nice. He just wasn't, he started playing basketball at a young age and he didn't always get it. And it's disappointing that we alluded to earlier about the Wizards drafting big men and haven't had a lot of success, from Vesely to McGee to Party John Ramos to, say Andre Blatch, although he's a second round pick and he really played above his draft selection.
Sorry to interrupt, but I wish we had if I had sounds like Party John Ramos, we need a sound on one.
Yeah, we need a sound everyone.
Yes.
So yeah, Serafin was on a team since John Wall's been on a team. It would have been nice for the Wizards to maybe keep him at 1 year, but it wasn't practical at this point. So I will be curious to see how he does on, what books Phil Jackson is going to give him to read over the summer. He got caught in a numbers game. Certainly would rather have Serafin over DeJuan Blair, who, didn't get off, he didn't get off the bench for a lot of reasons, and a lot of it's defensive and Serafin's a better rebounder or gets better defender than Blair. He's not as tied to the ground.
He's actually in shape.
That's another factor. So I think the Wizards would have liked to have him for depth, but it just didn't work out in a numbers game. And who knows? We'll see what he does in New York.
So you mentioned the segue, which kind of takes off my when I look back at the 5 years of my life of Kevin Serafin in my life, and I want to know. And everyone listening, when you think of Kevin Serafin, obviously KS Life was the hashtag. It used to be Kevin Serafin Life.
He's Kevin Serafin
Life. And then he went to the KS Life because he realized that was easier for him to tweet. But what is, not just the off-court, the social media stuff, which he obviously is one of the most active guys in the social media realm.
Goofiness. Right?
So, and then just on-court. So what I'm asking to you, and I'm gonna respond, off the court, social media stuff. On the court, Kevin Serafin, go. Give me what you remember. Give me some stories about what you remember, good or bad, negative or positive. Just when you think back at Kevin Sanfran's tenure as a Wizard now that it's over, and like, what do you, you know, aside from like, we just broke down the basketball part. It's like just the whole, give me your spiel.
It was always like, one, he had amazing touch for a big man, which was also always like, he teased you with this, but
the left hand for sure. Like, that's why big guys can go left hand the way he would go.
Exactly. But I think the amount of Whitman face that he got, like, so it was big. Just he took the coaching well. Like, Whitman was glaring.
So much better than JaVale did. JaVale would never take that.
Yeah, and Sanfran took the coaching well. Now, I don't know if it always led to results. Yeah, he improved over the years. I don't know if, you know, the Wizards ultimately saw, like, we're going to really invest in this guy.
Yeah.
But I just remembered, like, he just Whitman coaching, just right? Yeah, he took the coaching, and Whitman certainly gave the coaching to Kevin Sanfran. And, you know, he's a sweet kid. And bless his heart. That's
what you
that
got.
Encapsulates KS life in DC.
Well, I remember after his first year, he didn't really play. He was kind of out of shape, and he was kind of fat. And we went to the, which I didn't really realize at the time, and we go to the end of season interviews, which when the season's over, they interview everyone. And we're sitting there, we're interviewing, and Nick Young goes in this whole like soliloquy, the Chinese dude.
Yi
has all his belongings in his like garbage bag, and I knew that this is the last time he's ever playing in the NBA.
Locker room.
Yeah, it's kind of a bizarre experience. And like the Wizards, you know, they're not in the playoffs, whatever. Here comes Kevin Sanfran, hat on backwards, Nats hat on backwards, in the Segway, in the Verizon Center, rolling down in the thing, and like he's like comes in, his English is not very good at all, and I'm like, so of course I'm like, dude, you didn't really play this year. I have no questions. So three of my questions about this freaking segue. So I don't know if you were there. Were you there at that press conference? I can't remember if you were there.
I can't remember.
I wrote a post. Yeah. You can actually Google. Just Google Kevin Sanfran and segue. You'll find my post. And I took all these photos. And like I'm just sitting there asking him, like, where'd you get the segue, man? He's like, JaVale. JaVale's sold it to me. So then I'm like, what are you doing? Like, where are you going? He's like, oh, I'll ride to Georgetown. And then at this time, his English is like really. So I'm asking about his knee, and like, because he had knee surgery, and I'm asking what his knee's doing. He has no idea what I'm saying. Like, he doesn't even recognize. But when I ask him about his segue, he totally responds in English, like really good. And I was like, well, okay. So it was like, all right, well.
Because he lived in sort of like neighborhood of D.C. Well, like, some of the players have lived in sort of, you know, nice condos. He lived in sort of like the Adams Morgan area.
He did.
Which had, you know, has a lot of, you wondered about why are you an NBA player riding a Segway so much. But the neighborhood he lived in, like, well, you know, they have Segway police.
A 6'9" black dude speaking French riding down to Georgetown. And his friends with him, too. But anyway, okay, so the next one is when he got a fight with Marcus Camby during a game. Do you remember this? During the Portland?
Yes.
So he got a fight.
Yeah.
And the best part about this is that Marcus Camby at this time is Portland. They're playing Portland. And Portland is about to fire the coach.
The guy
Cheeks.
Rich
Cheeks.
Stotts, yeah.
Okay, they're about to fire him. They're doing really bad. And it's some game at the end of the year. And all of a sudden, Sanfran really, it wasn't even his fault. And Marcus Camby at this time is like 39-year-old, 40-year-old veteran center dude and literally wants to kill him. And so like, they kick Camby out of the game. And I think they kicked Sanfran out of the game, if I remember correctly. But Sanfran was just kind of like, I'm like a second-year player, what's happening? And what's funny is like Nick Batum, who's, so they're on the French national team together. So in the locker room, I'm in there. So Camby is ejected. No one really gives a shit about what Marcus Camby did in this game, but everyone wants to know, like, why did you just freak out on Kevin Sanfran? So sitting there, he's like, next question. Not answer the question. I was like, nah, like, hey, like, why'd you get so mad at him? And then, like, Michael Lee was there for Washington Post. Someone else asked a question, like, cut it off. And then, like, so I asked Sanfran, and, like, he kind of just gave me this, like, hunky-dory, like, I don't know what happened. And then he's like,
I don't know.
And then he's like, oh,
I don't know.
I don't know. And, like, and then he's and like, yeah, type in Nicholas. So then I asked Batum the question. He's like, yeah, yo, Kevin's my man. I don't know why Marcus gets so mad. Kevin's my man. And like, so I thought that one was really funny.
Which, to set the record straight, it was Nate McMillan, after Mo Cheeks, before Stotts.
Yes, Nate McMillan was the coach. They fired him, I think, like literally after.
And to also set the record straight, Nick Batum is a guy like who punch like a Spanish player in the nuts in like a FIBA or Olympics game or whatever. But we don't need to go down that path. Seraphin.
Well, the thing is, the only reason I bring up Nick Batum because it ended up being like, because Seraphin would boy with every French player. Tony Parker, Roddy Turiaf, like Boris Diaw. I hate Boris Diaw. Like, and when he played. But the other, so then when Seraphin, two other things. So when Seraphin would make a block or a dunk and make a good play, he'd do this bounce. And he would bounce from like the half, from like the free throw line, and he'd do this like mini bounce, and we're on audio, so you don't know. But you know, but Seraphin making like a good play, something happened, he would bounce literally and do this like little Seraphin bounce. The way like Wall does this thing, or like someone celebrates, and he would do this little like hop, skip, and a jump like from half court. So I always remember that as well.
The French Guianan bounce.
The first game of bounce. And I remember his terrible hair. So he went to the hair. So he went to some Cartier Martin type of hair where he went, if you remember, I actually have an interview with him and I asked him, and he went like, he put these little like
the small twists.
Small little twists in his hair. Like all of a sudden out of nowhere he had these like little twists in his hair. You're like, what did you just do,
like
dude?
A week.
Yeah, for like a week or two. Like, what did you just do? So I asked him, it was after Miami, he's like, oh, you know, he had his whole French little crew. He's like, yeah, dude, they did it for me. Like, they did all the things. It's like, yo, what are your friends, like, what are the teammates saying? Once again, I don't know if he understands the question. And then he kind of was like, whoa, you know, I want something different. And they got rid of the hair, like, 2 weeks later. And then he's never had that hair ever again. I thought that was actually really funny when I think about Kevin. Aside from the social media thing, in the social media stuff, I would say that, as we segue to another topic here, is that... Is it like he was just like a really like kind of a teddy bear? He kind of reminded me of Blotch. Like, I know people hate Andre Blotch, but he kind of reminded me a lot about Andre Blotch. He kind of was just like, he just played basketball because this is kind of what, like, how he made money for his family and stuff like that. But in reality, he was just kind of some dude who wanted to hang out with his friends and goof around.
Like, just so, like a combination of being like, earnest,
but really nice,
and also
like, really
goofy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Like, really nice.
Is not necessarily an endearing comparison. And I don't know, like, if you ever seen a movie of Mice of Men, but the one guy, Lenny of Mice of Men, it's who sometimes I would compare Blatch to a little bit, maybe Seraphin to some degree. Again, if you know anything about that movie, not exactly an endearing comparison, but I think the good part is, like, he was always a happy-go-lucky guy. I think it's good to have someone who has more of a positive attitude in a locker room. So, yeah, if we're thinking about things to take away of what Seraphin was... That sort of encompassed him, social media interaction, being happy-go-lucky, the Seraphin bounce on the court. You know, you have to root for him, even though he was a very polarizing player for Wizards fans. Yeah, like Wizards Twitter would.
But not as polarizing as like
JaVale
or Nick or Andre, right? Or even
no,
Jordan.
Yeah,
like,
I don't think so. But you know, polarizing like, in his own again way, happy-go-lucky right? way.
No, we're gonna finish the story. One story because right. Snaky. We have to end on Snaky. So the best part for ever seen everyone listening to this knows that he had a pet snake that got loose, never found it again, and he had all these snakes. He ends up with all these bulldogs. He got multiple snakes. He actually
loves
named
the animals.
He has like lost his snake Snaky, and like of course he names his snake Snaky. And then our friend Connor Dirks, who's not listening, but he gets really upset when people would call him Snaky because that's not his name. But anyway, so we would just call
him
Snaky.
They would call Seraphin like the nickname. We would just call him Snaky instead
of the snake. But anyway, so, you know, Dan Steinberger's obviously not listening as well because he has some Redskins shit to deal with.
Probably.
Yeah.
He could be transcribing.
Or finding a social media intern that he needs to interview for the Redskins. About, you know, there's some quarterback. The thing is that like, so at Media Day, and this is also on my YouTube page, you can Google this as well, is that so...
Media Day what year?
Media Day 2 years ago, after the snake thing broke, and he basically admits that the snake is still missing, and all these people are like, keep asking questions. And the best part, as I'm sitting there, and Steve Buckhantz is in the scrub, and he's just like, no, what kind of snake? Like, everyone's like, ready to transition. He's just like... Like, how big is the snake? So Steve Buckhantz, who never goes to these media scrums. I mean, this is the only time that Steve Buckhantz will ever go to any type of media thing. Is like, he'll go, like, he might be around some stuff, like in the locker room. But
he's just
never,
like poking his head in.
Yeah, immediately. And then he hears that, like, Seraphin has this missing snake in Adams Morgan somewhere, which ends up blowing up. And then Buckhantz is like, no, like, how big is a snake? Like, what kind of snake are we talking about? And then, like, Severin's answer, he's like, no, you know, this is fresh accents. And then he's like, so it's like this.
It's so like 6 inches or 8 inches. It's a very small snake.
So it's Buckhantz and Seraphin talking about snake size with their hands. And I find that is my newest number one takeaway of Kevin Seraphin's experience in Washington, D.C. Like, I have not experienced anything like that.
Really, I remember funny. That interview because I think you and I were, like, two of the people who started asking, like, brought up the line of snake questioning, because sometimes people are just at media day and they're just like, they're not thinking of.
What do you think about this year? Mind.
But then this, like, his answer is because he lost the snake and it went down like the sewer. He didn't know. Like, the city paper soon did like a blog post about
immediately.
And it was sort of a joke, like snake on the loose. But yeah, you're right. That
is market.
Yeah, that was one of Seraphin's. He had a great moment.
Yeah, no, it was great. So Snakey, I hope you do well in New York. Keep wearing those Wizards hats around. But, God, see, I'm glad we can close out Kevin Seraphin. Because in part three, there it is. I hope you do well. I'm glad we didn't give you $40 million, but I wish you well, KS Life. Let's go to this team. Ernest Tommy Shepard. Let's talk. So, they sign Alan Anderson from the Nets. They sign Gary Neal. They sign Jared Dudley. Now, I actually traded technically for Jared Dudley for a second round pick that they'll never get or whatever. So let's just talk about those three moves, those three players. Before we go individually on the players, like, what do you think of those additions to this squad? Losing Pierce and Seraphin, essentially, right?
Yeah, so I mean, it was just a comfortably tame summer for the Wizards. In years past, people
might 1 year deals on all of them, correct?
Oh yeah. And people, I think people see the bigger context of preparing for next summer, and, you know, Kevin Durant. That's a whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Where's my sound on that one? First mention. But keep going.
First mention of Durant.
I know what kind of Wizard podcast are you going to listen without Kevin Durant being listened? I don't know. Being mentioned so long, but keep going.
Who knows? And I think fans are fine with that because usually you would hear fans like, "Oh, you want to throw money at some big name player." They didn't do that. They gave Alan Anderson part of the non-taxpayer mid-level exception, so he gets $4.4 million one season. Very reasonable because he's a guy, he's sort of the wing guy. He can shoot three-pointers,
three and D, he can play
defense pretty well. He played really well with the Nets in the playoffs last year. He sort of came along for them, so it's kind of a sneaky, cheap get.
He can play the two and the three, both wing spots.
Yeah, and that helps secure the issues we were thinking about earlier. Like, as well. If you
decent
think
defender,
about Paul
decent
Pierce's,
defender,
yeah,
right?
He's a very decent defender. Definitely a step above Paul Pierce. But he's adds to that wing depth. So then you get, you know, Jared Dudley they used part of the trade exception. They got an Andre Miller, Ramon Sessions deal with Sacramento. And then they gave, the Bucks protected second round pick. I don't think the Wizards will ever have to really give that up. We later found out that Dudley has some issues that are similar to Martell Webster's, which are a whole nother concern. He's a guy who can play four. Ultimately, if the Wizards get Dudley later in the season, he's a guy who can play defense, guard fours, hit the three-point shot. So, again, it's this whole three wing defender, hit a three-point shot with walls, things we've been talking about to our blue in the face. Yes. Then there was Gary Neal, which the Wizards have flirted with wanting to get him before. He's a local guy, played at Townsend. They gave him the biannual exception, just over $2.1 million for 1 year.
Decent move.
Yeah, he has a lot of experience. He's played in an NBA Finals. You know, he's
played with one of the best
games.
Teams with the Spurs.
Played with the Spurs. Has sort of had up and down time since with the Charlotte and Milwaukee. But he's a guy. He gives
also Don Newman that you saw be on Spurs staff, one of the Wizards' lead assistants. Probably has experience with Gary Neal was probably another key ingredient.
Another
to this
key
move.
Part of that, I think. He just adds a little bit more depth. He's not like he's not the greatest defender, but he's not. I think he's smart enough not to get beat, and he's to be reliable,
serviceable.
He can hit a 3-point shot. He's a decent shooter. That was the key part of getting him. But he can also play. He's sort of a combo guard. He can play some spot one He can play next to Wall. I think when you look at Sessions and Neal, these are guys who are sort of combo guards that can play next to Wall or can fill in as the point guard when Wall's not off, you know, when Wall's not playing. So it gives a little bit more. So it's not like he's going to handle the ball and attack the basket, but he can run a pick and roll and can get the offense.
Spot duty at point. Spot like off guard. Maybe do some spot duty here and there if someone's like a little hurt.
Yeah, you're not going to rely on him. But it's overall the Wizards added some nice depth at shooting. Always key.
All three can shoot.
All three can shoot. And then defense, they stepped up a little bit more. Just, if anything, by getting rid of Paul Pierce. Yes, you lose a lot of other things with Pierce, as we've discussed. But defensively, this team has more options to throw at a guy like LeBron. Because, you know, when you think of the playoffs and you think of you're matching up against another team's best player, you have to throw multiple guys.
Allen Anderson, Otto, Beal. I mean, who else is going to be LeBron, right?
Yeah, you can put different guys on him. So I think it's, you know, the other move was re-signing Drew Gooden. I think it's one year, three.
The drizzle. $3 million, the drizzle's back. The drizzle's
which
back.
You can't argue with. But it was a nice, tame summer for the Wizards. Now, the only disappointing part is whether they knew about Jared Dudley's injury before they got him, whether that even matters, whether they're, say, okay, we've got depth. Jared Dudley's just going to be an addition to the puzzle once, you know, we get later in the season. But it was I certainly give the Wizards summer a B+ if you're looking at keeping flexibility for 2016 and making the team better.
I mean, I think that you know, I'll make a Kevin Durant reference. I think that keeping the ink dry for Kevin Durant was the number one mission of this offseason, correct?
Yeah.
The number one mission was obviously, let's bring Paul back for another year. But the number one overarching, like, what are you doing? What is your plan here? And they probably will never go on the record, but like, we are not stupid. We know.
Yeah, they can.
Keeping the money dry now with this.
But it's good to be flexible with three young guys and Wall, Beal, and Porter.
Totally. And then also, I didn't agree, but like, what I'm saying is that like, that now, granted, with the CBA and the extra money, now there's like 10 or 15 teams that have that money, right?
Right.
But like, let's be honest, it's pretty much going to be the Thunder or us or someone else. And maybe that's the Lakers or Miami or wherever. There's not going to be.
I don't see it.
I know, but like, if there's going to, and that's a whole other podcast, and I hate talking about this, but if you want to, but we have to mention this in this move because that is the context of the team. Because if they went out and signed some cat, and their money, they don't have the money to sign Kevin Durant, we would sit here on this podcast and rip them apart that Kevin Durant wants to come home, but they don't have the money, right?
Yeah.
So you have to give them the credit for not doing that, but also improving the team in the same point, right? And making these decisions that are over that, but like also knowing that, you know, anyway, so.
You got to be available.
Available. And I also like the fact that if you look at these three players, you say Allen Anderson, Gary Neal, Jared Dudley, good teammates, good leaders, good people, they're going to mesh, they're going to be okay in this culture. I think yes, yes, and yes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think that, like, they're not going to be, like, some type of, like, they don't have a past of being, they know their role, and maybe they don't play two games, and now they play, and they're not going to be, so, and, I mean, I don't know them personally, but I think they know that, like, yo, like, this is John Wall and
they
Bradley.
Care.
Like, this is John Wall and Bradley Beal's team, this is Gortat and A's team. Like, these are the four dudes, it's their team. And these are veterans or whatever, and these are young dudes that are the studs, and we just gotta figure out a way in our culture. And I like the fact that they're not maybe as talented maybe as someone else, but I don't think that maybe that talented guy doesn't buy into that system as well. So I think that those combination with the 1 year deals are good moves.
Right. They know where to fit in. Yeah, and they care about basketball.
Now my knee jerk reaction to the Jared Dudley decision when he comes out that he has a freaking surgery after they get him. Wait, no, then they're trying to say it's not as bad as Martell Webster or what, and like they're trying to tell me between the back, this back is not as bad as Martell Webster, and
I think it was when Martell had it, he had like a history of back issues,
correct?
So it's like, I don't know if this Dudley is his first didn't one. Have that as
and,
much
and there's a like he gave an interview with Zach Lowe on Grantland and after his surgery, and he talked about getting right, and he says that he thinks that he might be back in the middle of the season. He talks a lot more about the Bucks. He does say some really funny stories about Gortat, but like in like Zach Lowe's questions on this Grantland interview were mostly about like like basketball, and he's a very analytical dude, and he kind of just like free agency, and like because he opted out, and like all these kind of questions about that. He doesn't really get into like the Wizards so much. They kind of do, but they don't go, they go kind of go off the rails, like me and you go off the rails here on this, but like they don't, it doesn't get into like Dudley's like really, dude, like how long do you think you're gonna be here? Now granted, what I liked about Dudley is he's the player rep for the agency, for the union, for the Bucks.
Right.
And he asked him about the CBA, and he was like, I'm the player rep of the Bucks. I'm like, yo, dude, I liked the dude. Like,
wasn't Garrett Temple the player rep for the us. Wizards?
No, okay. No. So, you know what I mean? But I liked, like, another dude who is, like, yo, like, another, like, leader type of guy that knows his perspective and has, like, analytical things and, like, says what's up. Like, that's the guy that, yeah, maybe he's not playing. And I know it's not Paul Pierce, but it's not just like some dude just like getting a paycheck on the bench. Like he's in, you know, and like he, you know, and Wall's always respected to learn. Beal somewhat is begrudgingly because he's young, but he's getting better. And I feel like that is a positive addition. Now, what upsets me is like, really, dude, like finally get the stretch four, and then now he's out for like half a season after we deal with the whole Martell Webster signing, Martell Webster being bad with his back, and now we found a guy with another bad back, and you knew he had a bad back, and then he still signed him.
Yeah,
that's my knee jerk reaction. And now maybe the thing is,
like, he
maybe
wasn't like, though, you know, if you're thinking like, oh, a stretch four that's going to be enduring with a team, Jared Dudley was never the solution, and that regard, but
so
he was going to be.
Because he had a bad buck, you think?
No, well, he's going to be the guy off the bench. I just don't know how bad the Wizards knew
his back,
like
was.
His back would be, or how long it'd be out. But I don't. I think it was still a very low risk move to get him. It was a sign and trade for a trade exception. It's like 1 year,
$4 or $5 million or something, right?
Yeah, it's 1 year, so. I think that it was still a good move in a context of, you know, injuries happen. If you think this guy is going to be available and, you know, by the All-Star break, then that's kind of an ideal thing. Maybe he comes back and helps add depth or fills in a certain place. So, it, as disappointing as the injury is, and the Wizards still have a roster imbalance where, you know, I don't think DeJuan Blair fits in well with his team. I don't think he fits in well with the roster. You can't really call him a backup center. That's tough. You know, Martell Webster, he's a shooter, but I don't know how much the Wizards can expect to get out of him. And then Garrett Temple, you know, Randy Whitman's utility infielder. Yes, we've all sort of liked what he's brought to the game. He's been a solid player. But you don't, you know, at some point you have to say, like, you expect better out of that position, giving up a roster spot, one of 15 spots. So while Dudley, Anderson, and Neal fit within a nice roster composition his team's going toward, they still have an imbalance in other areas.
Great segue, Mr. Weedy, because we're going to end this part three Labor Day Palooza about the Washington Wizards on the current roster, right?
Let's
go over the current roster.
Well, you want, do the depth chart. Who you have at one?
Depth chart. I don't know.
Wall.
Jonathan Hildred Jr. Jonathan Hildred Jr. Wall. Happy birthday again, John. 25 today. Ramon Sessions.
Decent backup again.
Decent backup. Good trade. Good decision.
A lot better than he did in Sacramento. I'd like to see what he's
nice
got.
Nice guy. He's got a nice little goatee. You need to ask him how he like really trims. He trims that goatee. Garrett Temple.
Yeah.
Would be the third string backup point guard, I believe, at this point.
At this point.
I don't know if you
follow. Slash Gary Neal. I don't know who gets the third official run, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you follow him on Snapchat, but he's pretty funny. He's talking about, he almost got a hole one the other day on his Snapchat. Shooting guard, Big Panda.
Big Panda. Bow,
Bradley Beal. We don't really need to.
I've got Gary Neal penciled at backup too.
That's where I'm heading. Okay. Gary Neal, number two.
Although we discussed, he's a combo guard.
Number two, who can shift over if need be from foul trouble or something. And then Mr. Martell Webster.
Martell Webster. Third string two, although he can't handle the ball as well as you'd want a two guard to do. But he plays two generally just by default.
Yeah.
So that's six players.
What did they say?
Third in each category seems very unsatisfying, and you want you'd hope the Wizards would have an additional something.
Well, there was out there, there was rumors we need to address that, that Temple was going to be acquired by the Jazz, right?
Yeah, the Jazz were interested in him after Dante Exum hurt, like, his knee, tore his ACL or what have you, hurt his knee in international play. He had surgery the other day. And so the Jazz are, you know, maybe want some extra help at point guard because I don't know if guys like Trey Burns.
Do you think that's a flexible spot? Because he picked up his own option, right? Temple did, right?
And he did. He had a player option for this season.
I mean, is that something that you think the Wizards would ever just eat that money to get rid of? Because like to me, it's
they
like,
might.
Because him and Blair are the options, right? To eat the money, right? And Webster to maybe to the third level.
You can do like a stretch provision on certain guys. Yeah.
I think they should have done Webster last year, but now
you need a guy with Garrett Temple's sort of skills who can fill in. But at the same time, the Wizards almost have greater needs in terms of
we're gonna get to the off needs. The bench rim. We're gonna get things.
So six players for spots 1 and 2.
Okay, you got so who's starting at three? It's gotta be Free Otto. It's gotta be Free Otto.
He's a bird. He's flying.
He's flying. Free Otto. His Instagram is still kind of funny. We another podcast will talk about his trip to Poland with Mr. Marcin Gortat.
Lovely.
Alan Anderson would be the backup.
Backup three. Yeah. That's what I say.
So,
although he seems like a guy can play up anywhere
or two yeah. Four. So he could be probably above Neal or Webster. He could probably back up Beal, honestly, on the rotation. We're gonna get to that question. And then Oubre,
yeah,
and then Dudley injured, right?
Exactly.
So then Dudley maybe could be higher but injured, and then this is where things get dicey. This could also be another half hour podcast, but we need to roll it down because it's too late here on a Sunday, and you probably are tired.
My wife is texting me.
Yeah, we're listening. But this is really, I think, after we've established, it's kind of fun that we've established the leads. But to me, this kind of really is the lead of this team, of this roster. Like what? Like
who's on first?
Who's on first?
Who's at fourth? Who's on fourth?
Who's on fourth? Like playoff Whitman goes small. We've established la la. We talked about all that stuff, right? And then it's like Nene won't play center, right? La la la. You want to go center, and then they basically get Dudley to play the stretch four. Don't draft Portis. Don't do this. But yeah, here we are with the same people, and we get rid of Seffin. So here it is, with the same people to start the four or five, with really no other options of these things that we have established have maybe kind of worked in their favor in the playoffs, and now we're back. With Nene and Gortat at the four or five starters, right?
Here's what you have. Or Humphreys. Here's the situation you have. Or Humphreys, Drew Gooden is a stretch four, but he's 33 years old. Okay,
you're not going to start Drew Gooden.
Yeah, he'll be 34 at the end of September. So they're not going to start him, and he can rebound well, but has
no
defensive issues.
Oh yes,
Chris Humphreys. Maybe he can. He's a great long mid-range two shooter. Very good. I mean, I don't want to say great, but pretty good.
Well, he's working on it supposedly in the summer.
Yeah, well, long range two, he can do that. I don't know if he'll ever get out to the 3-point line, but the problem with Humphreys is that he's
a rebound hustle guy.
He can rebound, he can sort, he can play okay defense, but he and Gortat as a defensive 4-5 combo just never seen work. So
and
it's
the,
like.
And the numbers prove, and the numbers bear this out.
So I just. The analytics,
we haven't gotten nerdy on the numbers.
They bear this out.
The numbers make the point that you're making, right?
You don't see Humphreys as like, he's 6'10 guy. He's not like, he's not guarding other small ball fours, okay? So then you have, you know, if you go through the rest of the depth chart, you have DeJuan Blair. I don't know if you want to even call him.
Let's just go. Who I have penciled.
Okay, four.
Nene.
Nene is your, by default, is your four.
Humphreys. Then Gooden. Gortat. And then Blair.
Gortat's your five.
And then Blair is the backup of him.
I still think Nene is also Gortat's backup.
Correct.
In addition to the starting four, which is weird to say.
But I can't just put one center and then have a fourth, which then goes into the inefficiency of a roster that seems like they need another big. Is that what we're trying to say? It seems like they're missing a big.
They could have used Kevin Seraphin instead of Blair, first of all. But
or a young big. Just some athletic young big that's going to rebound and block shots, man.
Jared Famous.
Or just in general. Like, it feels like there is... You cut Blair, bring in the center, the 7-foot, you know, Hassan Whiteside. You stretch... Like, not him, but, like, you know what I mean? Guy like him.
Someone you can find.
You come in. And maybe they still will. Like...
They're pigeonholing themselves into having to play Nene to start the game and to start the season at four, And then they're going to say, like, who? Well, we have to manage their minutes.
Then maybe who goes in? Then who goes to the four? This is the things that I don't understand. This is what goes
you
back to the
play like you
imbalance.
Play like Otto
goes to four?
Otto or Allen
Anderson
depending,
to four, right?
Yeah, again, depending on who you're playing on a nightly basis. But it still seems very uncertain and not solidified because Otto is as a four guy, he's got to put on a lot more weight. He doesn't have that yet. We'll try him. We'll see what he'll play.
I mean,
some
I
four
just
this year.
On how Pierce I don't think can be four all season because of his age. I don't think Otto could be four all season because of like his weight. You know, come on. Maybe Allen Anderson. But here's the deal. So then Hump goes in. But we established. So then Hump goes in. Then who? Him and Blair. Who's the other backup big? Who's the fourth big? Who's the fourth big? So like when Gortat and Nene are out, if they're gonna start them. Then who are the three or four bigs? Who
like,
are the three or four bigs? So
you're playing like a
Gooden and Hump. You're going Gooden and Hump. You're going Hump
playing,
and fifth.
Here's his
joke.
It
doesn't
playing,
make sense, dude.
You're playing Wall, Beal, Porter, Allen Anderson, and then Drew Gooden. And it's like a
no
you're
defense
crazy,
at all.
You're, that's
no
your,
rebounding.
That's your knowing healthy guys. That's your craziest small ball lineup. Your best one right there.
And Allen Jefferson healthy would just destroy that. Horford fucking healthy would just destroy that, right?
But they don't have a rim protector off the bench, and I
it's
wish
it's a glaring
could,
need, right? Am I wrong
could,
to think about this? Like it's a
no,
glaring need,
right?
No, that's
why
right?
I feel after they made a lot of their summer moves and it seems solidified.
They shored up the wing. They shored up the wings. They shored up the dudes that can guard these guys.
They hard capped themselves. That's why I wrote that the Wizards might not be done this summer. They might make another move, whether it's to get rid of Garrett Temple, because it's not just creating a flexible roster spot, but there's some... You want to get once you're hard capped, you want to get sort of below the cap as much as you can, so
well,
it gives you more flexibility.
Explain it to the people. Explain it to people about the
hard cap. I'm still trying to understand the hard cap myself. But
well, where are they at?
When you use like certain exceptions, they're like right there. When you use certain exceptions, you sort of hard cap yourself at a set number, and so you want to create a little bit more flexibility in case something happens during the season, someone gets injured, and you really have to do something. That's why I feel ultimately. I don't know if it'll happen before the season starts, but they might figure out something to do with Blair or Webster or Temple just to create flexibility, but to also address the roster issues or the imbalance that we're sort of recognized.
Or here's the real option. Nene is the backup center, and they go with someone else at the four to start.
Who do you get, though? That's the problem. You can't get...
Like Nene is the big off the bench, and when he's in... And then Gortat comes back in for him. And I feel like those two have to be on the freaking court at all effing times. And if there's anyone else, it's a defensive fucking mess, dude, at the rim. Like, it really is. Like if Gortat or Nay are not on the court on this roster, if they're not on the court, it's a really defensive liability down low. Like
that's
like,
why they're going to try to figure out a way to make them help them play better. But it's even funny.
Like even together, I'm talking about them individually have to be on the court. Like together, we're still having issues of them playing together well. I'm saying like they just like one of them has to be on the court on this roster. Like you can't just roll out Humphreys or Gooden or Blair, which we're not going to play Blair, but like not have them out. Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
There has to be somebody else.
Something has to give. Because there's even been comments from Gortat, you know, from his camp in Poland that, you know, the TAI Polish correspondent Bartosz Bielecki give him props.
What did he say?
Gortat was like, essentially, like, you know.
I can't play with my boy Nene anymore, right?
Yeah,
it's
we tried
working.
To make it work, but, like, you know, he recognizes what everyone sees. That the spacing is not great when Gortat and Nene have to operate on offense together. Although defensively, I think they can make it work. But yeah, something's got to give with how this team is constructed and who can play where. And I still expect, you know, whether it's happening in the first couple of months of the season or leading up to trade deadline, there's moves or maneuverings that have to happen if this team expects to be ready for playoffs against anyone in 2016.
Do you think that the Humphreys could be the four and start? The guy
not next to Gortat. I mean, he can in a pinch.
And then Nay comes in.
In a pinch, maybe. We'll see. But I just don't... There's something about how...
What do you think
Humphreys Humphreys has similar range as Nene, although he's more reliable in his mid-range too. But I don't see how that creates better spacing. You know, maybe if Wall and Gortat are running more high pick and roll and Humphreys is that sort of guy trolling the baseline as a secondary passing option. That works well, but
help otherwise, help defender stuff. He's really bad.
Yeah, it's not like Harford is bad. Spreading the court to the 3-point line.
But even on defense, he's a really help bad like bad defender.
Yeah, he's just
His reflexes are kind of bad on help defense. Like rebounding, they're good. But
I feel that Humphreys is still above average defender, but you can't rely on him.
So what do you think Randy Whitman thinks? We're in this because I know people they criticize or whatever. Like, well, this conversation we're having right now, this is Randy Whitman's job. He gets paid millions of dollars to think about this. Randy Whitman has a whole staff that sits around and talks to him about these whole things that we're saying, and to be like, so who's our backup bigs, dude? Yeah, what are we going to do defensively? Because guess who's a really good, guess what we've established, and what do we complain about? We complain about his offense or his in-the-game play calling, which sometimes I think is overblown. But defensively, Randy Whitman has made this team, this thing a badass defensive team. So you know he's thinking about the same conversation we're having right now.
We have a luxury of two things in you know, being oblivious to a couple things. One is not knowing what goes on behind closed doors. And I don't think, you know, whether you're the common fan or you're someone who's more educated about the team keeps that in context enough. And the fact that you just don't know. But two, we, you know, as people analyzing the team, have a luxury of not saying like, oh, we don't have to cater to the personalities and like the locker room dynamic has to. And so that is a thing about you have to keep Nene motivated. You know, the team is, we're not touching on this subject in this podcast, but the team is thinking about Beal's extension in the contract this summer, next summer, that, you know, how that plays in the psychology of players. So I think, ultimately, I think the Wizards almost start again with, like, giving it the old college try with Nene and Gortat, knowing that maybe the roster dynamic changes as you lead up to the playoffs. Maybe
Otto's better, Beal's better, Wall's better, right? The second second unit's better, so, it masquerades their deficiencies a little bit. It's not like they're not heightened.
So you start off with something more comfortable to get the team dynamic comfortable. Maybe Nene sees, his thing is, he doesn't want to get abused down low, but if he understands how the NBA is trending and that, you know, he is worse off trying to guard some of these stretch fours. Yeah. He's going to be exposed more than if you're trying to guard, 1-5 and just trying to keep, you know, say Cleveland goes LeBron at 4 and then, you know, the Wizards say, okay, well, let's put Dudley on LeBron, assuming, you know, when Dudley's healthy. Nene's just going to have to suck it up and guard somebody like Mozgov or what have you. So I think...
You know what's also troubling about this is analytical people, in their numbers, the Wizards are so much better and Nene's on the court as well. And it's really, it's still, in the numbers, even though, these things piss me off in isolated examples, but if you look at the holistic, numbers,
Because communicates well.
Yeah, they're a better offensive team. Whatever, but there is, without a doubt, something going on with him and Gortat that is not working.
Right.
And not working.
Especially
but not,
on offense.
Not working,
defense,
not,
okay.
Not,
offense, not so
not
much.
Not working on an elite level. You know what I mean? We're trying to go to the Final Four. We're trying to win the playoffs. We're trying to win the conference. You can beat some teams here and there. You can beat the, the shitty-ass Sixers, the shitty-ass Knicks, or, whatever. Yeah. But, when it gets to, the thing, this thing isn't really, working on a night-to-night basis for some reason. Those are the adjustments that, I think they need to make. And, it's not going to make it off the jump, but, I think that eventually, there's something, and I don't know the answer to that. And maybe you're right. Maybe there is some other shot blocker type of athletic dude that they need to come in to be the fourth big and allow Nene to go to that. Someone can maybe play a four spot here and there, but then go small, but then let Nene to get the 20 minutes and not get hurt. Then we also haven't talked about getting hurt in the back of the wood.
Wow.
to be the backup big, right? To be the backup big, right?
They've certainly got to figure out. And it also gets back to spacing that you're allowing for Wall and Beal to operate. With Nene and Gortat, not only do they eat into each other's spacing,
totally.
But also for
Nene's
other guys.
On the high post. Yeah. Gortat's down low. Nene wants to roll the offense or run that pick and roll and either take that one-legged, off-balance, shitty-ass 20-footer that drives me and you crazy. But then he makes a sweet pass down low, right? But then Gortat just has that one move that he wants to go down low, right?
Yeah.
And so then... So it's like, or they want to do the screen, where it's like, sometimes you want to like, yeah, man, let's let Wall and Beal go a little something here, and then kick it to the dude that can hit the three, right? Like, because Wall's going to find that dude to hit the three.
It
you know?
Is.
You know? And so it's like that. But yet, those dudes will play defense better. So, like, it's kind of like the yin and the yang. Like, I don't know the actual answer to that. But.
We don't. I think the Wizards don't know either. They're but I think that figure that is, out through training camp to start the season.
But I think that it is still, and the reason I bring this up, and we're going to end this on this point, and for everyone, thank you so much for listening to these three versions, is like, I really think that is really like the number one thing of the season, because if you look at this roster, how he established, you're not like, oh wow, oh shit, we got Martell Wester at fourth, or Dudley at fourth, and now I'm like, Blair is the backup center,
yeah.
Gooden plays no defense, it's like after Humphreys, you know, Nene has injury issues, like, that's really, like, how we're rolling with here, like, we're trying to win the title, like, or trying to win the conference, like, I don't know. It seems like that is the thing that like maybe won't get as much attention in the whole thing. I mean, I think there is people saying like, oh, they need another big. I know there's been people saying that here and there, but I don't know if it'll really get the attention on a national media spot. Like, they'll just talk about like the signings and Beal being better.
To those who follow the team, the problems are evident, and it's just the solutions are, we know they have to find a solution, but it's like, how do they come to it? And, you know, we're, like we said, we're getting into September. We are fully into September. Labor Day is almost past. Where like training camp usually starts that first 4 weeks. So they have time to figure it out. They don't necessarily even have to figure it out in October or November. But this team, so they can see how things mesh. But there is ultimately, I think if you look at how these players play, how this team goes, they're going to have to make some adjustments if they expect to get past the second round this year.
Do you think that that this is something that they'll deal with before training camp, in training camp? Is this something that me and you are overplaying, or is this something that...
No, they'll wait a little bit, because there's still that whole flexibility cloud that they've been so good at
15,
managing.
They're 15... Let me tell you... Okay, we didn't put this part. They're 15 deep in the roster.
They're
15
deep. But there's no flexibility with the roster.
And they're also rumored to get Ryan Hollins, the training camp invite. I don't know if that's actually happened, but they think that to finish this out, we are less than 55 days for the first game of the year. And we will come back to all your people, to everything, because I think that, basically, in this all this time that we've talked about here on Labor Day Palooza, and your wife's mad at you, and my friends are down on 14th Street, and they want to meet me, and my roommate's wondering why the hell me and you are just talking about the Wizards forever. But the point is, to all the people out there to that are listening, this really is kind of going to define the 2015-2016 season. I mean, I think it's going to be like, does Beal stay healthy? Does Beal stay healthy and be legit? Does Wall go the same level and go bigger? But other than that, Gortat would just be Gortat. But like, what are they really?
There's so many questions. I'll ask you this question.
What are they going to do on the back end? You know,
I'm asking you this question. There are so many questions, and that's natural with every NBA team. But do you feel that the Wizards are in a better off position right now on September 6th? Because we're almost to the 7th in Labor Day. Are they better this Labor Day than they were last Labor Day?
Yes.
Are they better off?
Yes.
Okay.
You want to know why?
I agree.
Want to know why?
Right,
Otto Porter.
Otto Porter. All back to Forrest.
It's all back to Fiatto. It's back to Fiatto, dude. Like, we
don't put that kind of pressure on
Otto. No, I don't
want to.
It's because here's the deal. It's like, I already know Beal and Wall, what's up, man? Like, I don't know. They had some game, dog. Like, we all seen it. Like, I'm not complaining about Wall needs to, like, be better at threes, even though this year didn't shoot as many threes. You know, he needs to stop ball watching on defense. Beal needs to like be healthy all season, which he didn't, whatever. But we didn't really know what was up with that at all. We're just hoping him, maybe he gets out to be a ninth or tenth guy in rotation. And now you're like, yo, dude, like, you proved that you were like the man. Like, you, and then he D'd up DeMar DeRozan in those playoffs too. You forget that? I didn't mention that earlier.
He did.
Yeah, he D'd him up. So it's like he's doing it on both ends. So that's why I feel they're in a better spot.
I'm essentially with you. I still think Otto's emergence last season, like we talked about in one of the earlier segments, is what sort of helps define last season. But I think the Wizards are in a better off position because you've still got John Wall and Bradley Beal,
And I still think another level. Yeah. I think there's another level for both of them.
Exactly. That's my reasoning. From how we see them progress.
Bradley Beal's 22 and he's 25, man. Today, happy birthday again, John Wall, Jonathan Hildred.
Happy birthday again.
Yeah,
but, like, but another, that's why the Wizards
don't get
are
in trouble today. Don't get arrested in Vegas. That was another segment. Don't get arrested in Vegas.
True. Like, that's why the Wizards are in a better position, though. Wall and Beal. And that's what it. Still a lot of questions surrounding this team, but it gets down to, like, hey, these two guards are what's
going
to carry this team next year.
And don't you think that that's why, like when we complain about the drafts or we complain about these things, these signings or whatever, and it comes out to, like, John Wall's pretty damn good.
John Wall's pretty damn good.
And then he kind of, like, masquerades about, like, because then you just, like, yo, dude, like, here's your open three in the corner. You make it or you don't. Like, you know, he's like, yeah. Like, but guess who's creating the open three? John Wall, right? Like, it's not like you're sitting there, like, oh, can you hit a three in the corner? It's like, we're still brother, go to this. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, Trevor Ariza got paid. Martell Webster got paid.
It's like, a nice problem to have when John Wall's, the, like, clearly the best player in the team, but then Bradley Beal is more likely to make the Olympic team. That's a good problem to have. I think on Labor Day, that's how.
So you want
to
do it?
Okay.
Well, you wanted me to go off on a whole Coach K rant because you're digging. You're digging.
Oh yeah, yeah that's a whole other summer going on segment.
We will go back there, but what we'll do is that we'll play some music. Play some music.
Little
outcast on the way out.
For Atlanta.
Thank you so much. I love the Pixel Roll Lollapalooza. Kyle, this is great. Hopefully you keep listening and you share it. You should leave everyone that listens to a podcast always says, like, leave awesome or terrible reviews on iTunes, so I guess you should do that.
I think we're going to try to be more consistent.
Yes, we should do it every Sunday night.
We're going to try to, like...
Not three hours like this.
No, but we'll have segments and we'll figure it out.
We left a lot of stuff on the cutting room table.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll
have
quotes.
There's still plenty of September to go around.
But it's been a good... It's been a... But we are 50 some days out. We're less than 4 weeks to media day, and you obviously hear from us on that. And thank you so much for all your support. Truth About It, Mr. Kyle Weida, and hey, it's been a ride, and I believe that it's gonna be mad fun this summer.
Let's get wizard.
Let's get wizard.
All right.
Later, bro.
That concludes.
Be safe. Tip your bartenders and waitresses on the way out. Yeah.